If there's one reason why Lighthouse Stories was made, and to be honest, there's more than one, it's because of automation. Long before there were self-driving cars, it occurred to those responsible for the lights ringing the Irish coast that here was a job ripe for automation. Electric lights replaced paraffin as naturally as paraffin replaced whale oil, and human hands could be automated into retirement too. And so the lights around Ireland, and indeed the whole globe, became emptied, unmanned, automated. Keepers became ex-keepers, left these days to write memoirs, gather occasionally, and remember who was the luckiest to be alive. One keeper in particular already seems like a creature of myth, DJ O'Sullivan. DJ O'Sullivan was a third-generation lighthouse keeper whose own three sons, Donal, Eugene and Hugh, also took up the calling. DJ worked many Irish lighthouses, from Fastnet to Inishtrahull, to pinch the title of one of his own collections of poetry. But really, it was in his spare hours that DJ O'Sullivan came into his own. Austin Clark claimed to have found the lighthouse poet when DJ submitted to the RTE poetry programme Clark ran. And Clark claimed too that DJ's perfect phrases about football-jerseyed bees and boot-marked beaches became forever lodged in his mind. O'Sullivan's was a poetry of nature, simple but intense, its tight couplings growing from a daily practice of looking, of searching the world around the base of his lighthouse with the same focused attention he scanned the distant horizon. His looking was of a scientific grade too, and O'Sullivan knew a rare moth when it flew in, which is why a moth, Luperina testacea ab Sullivani, is helping keep the name of DJ O'Sullivan on the air. As you can imagine, as well as a good place for writing, a lighthouse with its beam beckoning from the dark night is a fine place for meeting moths. In this week's Lighthouse Stories, we're trading a watch with Lighthouse brothers Donal and Eugene as they remember Lighthouse life and introduce their father's Lighthouse poetry. So just like a keeper hands over his watch, we're handing over to Donal and Eugene to keep you off the rocks for the night, or at least for the next 20 minutes.
My name is Donal O'Sullivan, and I have been in the lighthouse service for 35 years.
I'm Eugene O'Sullivan, brother of Donal and Hugh, who's also a lightkeeper. All my family were in the lights, father, uncles, cousins, seemed to be all drawn to the lighthouse service.
This is a poem from a book my father had published entitled From Fastnet to Inishtrahull. Memories. Having lived in a lighthouse on a bare rock surrounded by sea for most of my life and now retired, the thing I remember is dense fog clearing at the turn of high tide and the stars coming out like primroses in the sky.
This poem now is called Home as a Sailor. The raft came drifting shorewards in the night, hurtling across the mountainous green seas. Gales had almost squalled themselves out, and stack sheltering gulls took flight again. Crouching low, the sailor grasped the lifelines. Cursed the elements. The surf boomed in his ear. His pained eyes sought the cloud-hidden half-moon. The raft swayed and shuddered, then crunched on rock. Coast guards arrived and found the broken wreckage, lowered the cliff ladders over the headland, saw the sun rise, but the sailor did not. They roped the body and parbuckled it up.
The next poem is about the Fastnet Rock. This is a rock I spent my first 3 years on. I was appointed to it and went out to it by ship, the Ierne, from Castletown Bear. And the ship landed at the rock and lowered a little boat, and you went in under a derrick. You can imagine someone fishing with a rod, but instead of a fish on the end of the rod, it was a keeper that was hauled up. And this is a poem, Fastnet Rock. I write a log in this lighthouse, autumn waning, winter coming. Wind from the north, gelid blowing. Sun cloud shadowed, shortening days. Ships wave battered, ploughing ocean, and every night migrant birds calling. Spindrift sprayed the tower windows. A time of change, that's my log. My time on the Fastnet, I was with a great crowd of fellas there, you know. And when I went there, it was by boat from Castletown Bear, you went, a ship. And it serviced all the Blasket Islands, the Nishtirit, the Skelligs, the Bull Rock, and the Fastnet, and Roan Carrig. They're all stations down there. And that was his main job, to relieve the rocks, keepers. Every fortnight there was a relief. And when I went there, there was no electricity. And it was oil lamps, coal fire. I remember the first week I landed on it, they had the coal down at the bottom of the tower. And I went down to get a bucket of coal for the fire. And it was a howling gale. Sea going over the rock. And when I went down the tower, suddenly the wind seemed to cease. No noise at all. But when I came up again, I realised why that was. I was under the water. Yeah, it was covered. Yeah, the sea would go right over the lantern.
Christmases on lighthouses. Don't remember that much about them. I remember the one I remember most was in Blackrock Mayo. I went out on the 18th of December, and the man ashore would have given us two ducks alive, Ted Sweeney. And he would give us corn to feed the ducks. And you went out on a boat, got into a curragh first to go out to the boat that was going to take you out to the lighthouse. First time I was ever on a curragh, and well, I must have got oil or something in my hands, and I reached over the side of the curragh, and I thought I nearly turned it upside down. because I wasn't used to it. I didn't know they were that fragile in the water. But anyway, we went out to the rock, and the men in the boat were telling me how quick the man was. So these things, all these reliefs had to be done fairly quick. They would go in stern first into the rock and watch the swell coming around the rock so it could get away quick. And again, it was Derek. This Derek was relieved. So the man who was coming off was, of course, he was delighted coming off for Christmas. Dressed to kill, full uniform on him, and a post bag with the Christmas mail from the keeper who was having to stay on. They were telling me going out on the relief boat how quick he was on this, as we called the stick, to get off this hoist. So two of us were going on, John Carmody and myself, and we were landed on the rock, and Pat, we'll call the man coming ashore, he was coming, and he was that quick on the stick getting off that he hit the back of the stern of the Curragh into the water. We were up fairly high on the rock watching this, you see, and you could see, I always remember his cap floating on top of the water, and Pat heading for the bed of the sea and the post bag trailing behind him. Very quiet man, mostly, but eventually anyway, he came up and put his head above the water, and blew out the water and bubbles out of his mouth, and the air was blue when he got up. When we saw that he was okay, we had a good laugh about that. Two ducks that we brought onto the island, I remember distinctly, just before Christmas Day. The ducks were near pets at this time, after feeding them with the corn. Who's going to kill the ducks? Well, John Carmody is. God, he says, I never killed a duck, you know. And we, John and myself, went out to kill the ducks anyway. Got the duck, and I never killed a duck, but I saw men doing it. And they twisted their neck around and twist, pull, but none happened, but the duck was left sitting looking up at me. You know. And John, being a big, strong man, he pulled and pulled the head off the duck. But it was a dead duck or no dinner as far as we were concerned. I remember it was beautiful, beautiful Christmas Eve, sitting on the rock, plucking the duck outside, and you could see for miles and miles. And God, I thought, this is great. And it wasn't such a nice place at all, you know, Black Rock, Mayo. It wouldn't have been considered one of the better rocks. But that's the Christmas that I remember most anyway. Poor gal's gone, God rest him. And John still, he's living in Limerick, and he is still a character.
This is a man that went fishing for the conger eel. I'll just give it to you, the poem. The conger. The conger swam in a circle tight, seeking a place to lie in at night. Probed the rock hole's beds of seaweed, attempting to remedy his sleepy head need. But a fisherman came, dropped a silver hook, baited with whelk, a camouflaged crook. The foolish fish, with a happy grin, snapped hard, the fisherman pulled him in. The eel then wriggled and lashed madly, as his captor hauled him out of the sea. Then came a wave, swamping the boat. The fisherman spluttered, spray choking his throat, let go of his catch and cursed the swell. A 10 later expletive, bloody hell. the Ila skipped, but not to snooze. In port the fisherman went on the booze, told the story in pub after pub, exaggerated, well that's the rub. The more drink he imbibed, the better his tale. By the time the bars closed, the eel was a whale.
So you heard, you could spend all night telling stories about people cooking and, you know, what they would have. And when we started off, there was no, you had a small fridge. It was an oil-fired thing. And there wasn't room, you know, for bread and all. And if you went off for, in the wintertime, you could be off for a month, you would take few loaves of bread with you anyway, but after a week or so, they would start to go mildewed. You'd be cutting the mildew off them and you would eat it as long as you could. Sometimes you would throw it in a basin of water and soften it up and put it in the oven, and that would keep you going another couple of days. But it was, you know, it was tight, and the meat, it was a leg of mutton nearly everybody had, and you cut slices off that and you would be washing that in a basin of water and vinegar to try and make it as good as possible before you'd eat it. And Black Rock now again, back to Black Rock. They used, it must have been during the war, they had no polish for their boots that they used to wear. And they used to use the fat of the meat to oil their boots a bit. And then they'd throw it over the wall, you know. But they got that bad on Black Rock, they said, we'll have to go out and look for the polish brush, you know, to have something to eat. And another one about the food was, this was in my time now, in North Arran, Erech. There were three months overdue. They couldn't get out from Inishmore out to the island. It was that bad. And they said, they were telling me, some of the boys that were on there said that they had hens. They always kept a few hens for fresh eggs. But they said after a couple of weeks, these hens disappeared. And they thought they were after being washed off the rock or something. But all that was left on the island was a ram. That was the only. And so after weeks anyway, without very little to eat, they thought, we're going to have to kill the ram. To kill the ram, and they ate it, and they said that, you know, it was rank. It was, you know, they could nearly smell the ram off it. It was awful. But they ate it anyway. They had to eat it. Eventually, relief came anyway. Everybody was talking about the poor keepers out in Erech, you know. They must be starved altogether. But the day they left anyway, the hens appeared. The day they were getting the boat ashore, the hens appeared from somewhere, they don't know where it was. They got into the Inishmore, and at that time you had to stay on the island then and wait for a ferry to Galway. But they went in, and there was great sympathy for them anyway, and they stayed with a Mrs. Keneally, who was a lovely woman, and she was real sorry for them, you know, and she had put on a good feed for them. So she put on this big feed of lamb chops for them. But sure, they couldn't look at them. They were sitting on the rat, you know. So God looked at the poor woman. She couldn't understand why they weren't eating them. And that was in the early 60s that actually happened, you know.
There were ghosts, supposedly, on different stations. But there were something that was set up by the keepers on the Skellig's Rock. There were supposed to be monks walking about, and this fella dressed up and put boards on his feet. But one of the other keepers got out before him, and he was dressed up. So when your man went to make believe that he was a monk, he saw the real monk. So that put him going. Thank you. Down on Innistrahull, that's the most northerly station now. The moon shines on the Isle of Innistrahull, bejewelling nuptial-tinted herring gull, mayfly dancing in the balmy air, and moth returning to its daylight lair, a shoal of herring breaking out at sea, sparkle like hoarfrost on an aspen tree. The snail arboreum with his watery glue and bunch of pearlwort in a crystal dew. The flaming sun ascends o'er Kintyre's mull, throws out his arms, day breaks on Innistrahull. Then on Innistrahull, the British Air Force flew over it on their North Atlantic patrol every day, these Shackleton aircraft. They were flying from Ballykelly in Northern Ireland. They had a base there, and they would go out on the North Atlantic, I suppose, checking up, and there would be enemy submarines possibly, and checking, or any other craft that would be in the water, Russian submarines. And they were just keeping an eye on the coast. And on their last flight, they dropped a plaque on the island. And that's in the Maritime Museum in Greencastle. And a letter also to the keepers from the commanding officer in Ballykelly in Northern Ireland they flew from. It was just that they passed over Innistrahull on their northern patrol every day for X amount of years, and they were just bidding them farewell, that was their last passage. And it was a delight to see the light flashing when they were coming off their northern patrol. It was, they knew they were nearly at home. I started off at the Bailey Lighthouse as a supernumerary. There you were sent round different lighthouses. The first place I went to was Eirik, which was an island in Galway Bay. Then I was transferred to the Fastnet, Tory Island.
Went to the Bailey.
Went to Eagle Island then, Innistrahull.
Innistirucht.
Rathlin Island.
Went to Tory Island then.
Ferris Point.
I went to Innistrahull. I spent years there. I loved that island.
Finished up back at the Bailey where I started.
From Eagle, I think I went to Kinsale. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my time. I was the very last lightkeeper leaving. And I remember they were all gone from the Bailey. I was sitting there, I was after stripping the bed, taking whatever and packing them into a bag. And I'll tell you, it was a sad day for me. I was the last lightkeeper, and the last lighthouse to be automated was the Bailey Lighthouse. And that was in March 1997.
I live out of this world, far from the land. A lightkeeper, they ask. They shake my hand. It must be lonely out there. They do not understand. For rock-bound by the tide, and free from the throng, sweet peace fills my breast the whole day long. Every window's wind whistle is a blackbird's nesting song.